Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I'm your host, Preston Schlankhofer. It is great to be with you again, and I hope you enjoy this episode of Civil Defense Radio. We aren't in the Civil Defense Radio bunker complex today. Instead, we are out enjoying a cigar with friends at a local cigar lounge, the Hogshead Cigar Lounge in south part of Fredericksburg, Virginia. And since our guest today also enjoys a good smoke, we agreed to meet here and talk about cyber hygiene. I believe you will enjoy this subject as much as my wife and I did when we first heard Kevin talk about it with a group of friends. Actually, it is a bit scary because there were many things we had to change after listening to him. In fact, we had to have him cover these steps a second time to better grasp what we needed to do and how to do it. But before we get into our discussion, let's get a couple of administrative things taken care of first. Please remember to like, share, and comment on our shows. We're available, whatever platform you're listening to this on, please. We are on Facebook, Telegram, MeWe, and YouTube. So, our guest this episode is Kevin Argiro. He is a cybersecurity professional with a history in security engineering and the fintech or financial technical space. He is a certified intrusion analyst and a certified incident handler and currently leads the cybersecurity incident response team at a U.S. government agency. Kevin, it is a pleasure to have you on Civil Defense Radio. Welcome.
Thanks, Preston. Thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure having you. You know, this subject is something that my wife and I really, really took notice of when you were talking about it the first time we heard you with a group of friends. And then we just had to have a second time to listen to what you were saying, because we, even though we took copious notes, my wife is a copious note taker, she had troubles deciphering what she wrote. And so we needed to hear this again. So what's going to be good for our friends out there listening to us is they're going to be able to replay this
multiple times.
Yes. So we may go back and listen to it multiple times so that we make sure that we have all of our stuff in a row, because there are so many threats out there and vulnerabilities that we create ourselves that is amazing.
Just adds to the problem.
Yes. And your expertise in this is something that we really need to have out there. And I'm glad that you're with us this show, because this is going to be a must listen to for anybody that does anything on a computer, which is everybody.
Exactly. Just to throw a statistic out there, in the last year alone, there's 31 billion IoT devices in the year 2020. That IoT device is expected, or IoT devices on the internet, is expected to increase to 75 billion by 2025. So IoT devices is an acronym or fancy word for essentially anything that's connected to the internet, whether that be your phone, your smart thermostat, your smart lock at home, anything really. And the running joke in the industry is that, at some point in time, your microwave is going to start talking to your toaster, and you hope that the hackers don't get into either one of them.
Yeah. Well, that's all the more reason for me not to have them. It's the phone listening to us and the television listening to us is bad enough. I don't want anything else that has speakers and cameras.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, so I think really, and there's a lot to obviously unpack, and we can spend hours and days and weeks talking on this subject because you can really go down a rabbit hole. But I think what I really want to, the message that I want to get across to, you know, your user base and you listening to the radio today is that, you know, there's some easy steps that you can take, and some personal things that you can do to better protect yourself against these threats, right? And not just become another statistic, you know, as we see that the absolutely, you know, incredible rise in that. I mean, just since, you know, in the last year since COVID, there's been over a 300% increase in, wow, in attacks, and that's due to, you know, the nature of having most folks, you know, working from home now, and people, mm-hmm, you know, have time on their hands and they're on the computer and on the internet and everything else. But yep.
So the bad guys are targeting individual homes now where they didn't necessarily do that before because so many people are working from home. Is that what I understand?
Yeah. So basically what we've opened up, we've kind of opened up a can of worms, right? Where started back in the day, right? We have a just a single enterprise, right? And we put up these firewalls and right, we put all these protections around, you know, our enterprise or our business, right? And now as things become remote and services move into the cloud, there's all these different and new avenues that attackers can use to infiltrate these,
yeah,
you know, businesses and folks. And it's certainly, as you said, it's scary, but it's also, you know, it's job security for me, I guess you could say.
Well, yeah, people in your profession. Anybody out there that's looking for a good paying job, I think cybersecurity is probably the growth industry of the future.
Most certainly. There is certainly a lack of cybersecurity professionals, and there's an extremely wide opening of job positions, and the targeted you know, amount of cybersecurity professionals that it would take that mm-hmm, are, you know, that there's open positions to the amount of people that are actually trained to do this job is quite off balance,
right,
in the current stage that we're at.
Yeah, well, I know that there's a big need for that in the military, so that's a good place for young people to start. But for older people, I think the subject of this class, which is Cyber Hygiene 101, is the place to start for us old folks. And this is something that we really need to concentrate on and make sure that our digital environment is secure, from our bank accounts to our computers and phones and laptops and tablets, whatever it is, you know, whatever we're dealing with, even the home, you know, the basic router, we need to have some type of special protection on that as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things out there that, again, we can go down a rabbit hole of things that you could do. And there has to be a balance between going down, you know, and, you know, being super on the side of, you know, you don't want to type your username and password into anything. And, you know, having extremely laxed username and passwords, right? So what I'd like to go over and express to everyone is that there's a couple of things and topics that we're going to hit in the episode today that anybody can do. It's more of just kind of a lifestyle change, like, you know, if you're changing your diet and you try to get into a new diet or, you know, eat a little bit healthier, we're talking the same way for cyber hygiene here.
Okay, great. So where do we want to start and talk about first? Because we have 2 pages worth of stuff here, which will be in the show notes. So you'll be able to go and check out his notes and almost be able to work off those, but you will need to have some of the things that he's going to tell us about. So where do you want to start off first, Kevin?
So I'd like to start on, you know, how do you know if you know, your data is at risk or has already been, you know, exposed in some way, shape, or form, right? And the easiest way to do that is to use a website called haveibeenpwned.com, and pretty simply, you'll get a page that you can type in your email address, and then simply sign up for alerts. So in the future, that if you do, or if there is a breach of your information or your username and password shows up on the dark web somewhere, that you're alerted to it and you can take the necessary actions like changing your passwords and things of that nature to so that you're protecting yourself.
Well, I did that, and my personal email had 5 hits.
And that's not unsurprising, because most people that go and put in that, they don't even know they've been breached, right?
Yeah.
Because there's although you see it in the news every day, right? We see, oh, this company got breached, or they got hacked, records lost. I mean, they're just in 2020 alone, and this is kind of an alarming rate. Healthcare has been targeted, obviously, you know, due to COVID, but the, you know, threat actors see a very strategic and money-making way to leverage healthcare data against, you know, and it's profitable for them.
And they
right?
have everything.
Yes.
Healthcare companies, doctors, hospitals, they have everything.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. If you're trying to hide something about your medical history, they can blackmail you too. So you're open in a lot of ways. So, okay, the website again is haveibeenpwned.com. That's haveibeenpwned.com. And that should be the first thing you do. Please do that. Even while you're listening to this, if you have the ability to do it, check it out, because you're going to have a big surprise. Now, I have a couple other emails because of different organizations I've belonged to. Those came up zero, which is good.
Yep.
My email for this business is zero. So that's good to know. So what's next?
So once you kind of get an idea of kind of where you stand, right, and even if, like Preston said, if you type your email in there and you don't see anything, you're like, oh, good, great, I'm safe. Well, the answer is maybe you're really not safe, right? Because it may not be there today, but it might be there tomorrow, right? So we want to take the necessary steps and put in some additional, you know, guardrails in what you're doing on a daily
right.
basis to stop that from happening in the
right.
future. So the first thing I really want to touch on is password hygiene, and this is what I really stress the most. This is kind of like the number one and number two thing to do. One is use a password safe, and number two is turn on two-factor authentication. These are two really great and easy things that ordinary folks like me and Preston can do, and you at home can do, to really negate the issue at hand. And to kind of give you an idea of what a password safe is, in simple terms, it's a vault that you store all of your credentials in, and you use those credentials for all of your different logon accounts. But those credentials are stored safely and hidden behind a password that, you know, is what we call humanly readable, right, or humanly memorable. And the passwords that you use to log into your accounts that you store in that password safe are extremely complex passwords, right? So things that are not humanly readable, not humanly memorable, right? Because obviously we're not a supercomputer, right? So it's hard for us to memorize, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 passwords.
Right.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I personally have about 150, 160 passwords for all of my accounts and logins and everything.
I may not
else.
Have that many, but I know I have too many.
Yeah, exactly. So this is both kind of a not only is this good for security, but it also helps the ordinary everyday user to log into their account securely and not have to memorize all these passwords. right? So there's a couple of different password safes there, they'll be in the show notes, right, Preston? So,
yes.
So the folks, you'll be able to kind of go through and pick and choose kind of what password safe would best suit you. I personally use 1Password, which is a great password safe. It's subscription based, but it's cheap enough that you're talking maybe $30-$40 for the year. So you just think of it as
cheap insurance.
Cheap insurance and something you can use on an everyday basis.
Now, in your class that you gave us, you talked about the difference between free and paid for. Can you cover that real quick?
Sure. So, one of the big things that I do stress to people is, free is not always good. It's you have to understand that application developers and companies that are offering these services to you, they have to make money in some way, shape, or form, right? So, if an app is free, they're making their money and they're making their profit to support the business in another way. And most of the time that profit is normally coming from, either data mining or selling your data or, serving you ads in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
So, Facebook, all the big, alphabet letter groups that are out there are, they're taking that data and they might not be directly selling it, but they may be indirectly selling it, mining it, and, selling that to folks to better target you.
Yeah. So what's next?
So once you have a password safe set up, the next step that I like to tell people is turn on two-factor authentication, right? This is a very simple thing to do. I mean, most of the folks listening are probably already have or have experienced two-factor authentication. They just don't realize what it is, right?
Right.
So two-factor authentication is something you know and something you have, right? So the something you know is your username and password. The something you have might be your phone or a token, right, that would generate a one-time password to log in. So sometimes you might see when you go to log into an account, maybe from and you're maybe in a different state or something, right? You might get a notification like, oh, we sent you a one-time password to your phone, and you get a couple-digit code sent to you, and you pop that in real quick, and it lets you authenticate.
Right.
But what I tell people, right, and I've seen firsthand two-factor authentication prevent. An attack. My significant other had an account on a system, and she got a notification one day, a two-factor authentication, because she had two-factor authentication on because I hounded her about it, right? And she gets a text message to log in. She goes, "This is weird. I didn't log in." So sure enough, she goes into her account, see where the login came from. It wasn't her. But had she not had that two-factor authentication turned on, she would have never known that somebody was in her account.
Right. Oh, that's especially, your financials. You need that. Because otherwise, they got access to your money. That's one of the reasons why if you're in crypto, in the crypto space, you have two-factor authentication besides your very secure password.
And a lot of the crypto wallets, they force you to turn on two-factor authentication,
yes.
Which is a good thing.
Yes, yes.
And I wish all companies would do that. But,
yeah.
We'll get there one day, hopefully.
Yeah, well... I have changed all my financials with not only with my password wallet, but also with two-factor authentication. So I did learn.
Yeah, and that's a great place to start. I would say I think that a great place to start is because this is not something that you're going to do overnight, right?
Right.
It's a lot of work, and people don't realize how many usernames and passwords they have for all these applications that they log into, right? So what I tell people is, start with, your financial stuff,
mm-hmm.
right?
I had to pay bills this month, so that was a great time to do it.
Exactly. So you start with that, right? And then you go to a subset of stuff, right? And the next time you go to log into your,
right.
Your Facebook or MeWe account or something, right? And change your password and then put that into your password safe.
Yeah.
Set up two-factor authentication when you do that, right?
Yeah.
And you do one at a time. Maybe you do 1 week, 2 a week, right? And then over the course of 6 months, right, to a year, you'll have all of your passwords in the password safe. So it's not this big, huge uplift to try to get there.
Now, I have used, and you're going to cringe at this, I have used Google Chrome for years. And Google Chrome just happens to have some of my passwords now. And it seems like it pops up automatically to save the password. And so I've been hitting, you know, no, 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 every time it pops up because, you know, my password vault is active.
Yeah, so as a security professional, I highly recommend that you don't save your passwords in a web browser. It's better for the end user, a better experience for the end user, it's not the most secure way to do it.
Right. It's convenient, but it's not good.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I broke down and paid for a crypto wallet because I wanted, like you suggested, I wanted that ultimate security and privacy. And so that's important, especially in this day and age where too many things are being hacked. Too many people's information is being stolen. Even your mortgages can be hacked and converted to somebody else, and they own your house now because they broke in.
Yeah. The interesting fact on that, so when talking about identity theft and things of that nature, the most targeted group of folks for identity theft is actually children. And the reason for that is because most children are not applying for jobs or credit cards, and they don't have, you know, any type of monitoring around their credit score, right? So parents, if you're listening, it would be my suggestion, and one of the things that I expressed in the class also, and what most people don't know, is that you can freeze your credit. And that's it's very simple thing. You can go on to, you know, like Equifax or TransUnion website, and they have a web portal there. You type in your information, you request to freeze your credit. And at any time, you can unfreeze your credit. There's no charge. It's completely free. And when you're doing so, and when your credit is frozen, right, nobody can open up accounts in your name. So if you're not currently trying to buy a car, a house, or open up credit cards, my suggestion would be to freeze your credit. And that way, you know, you're safe and sound, and nobody is opening up accounts without you knowing.
That's good. That's good. And you can still use your credit cards with no problem.
100%. And it does not affect your credit in any way, shape, or form.
Good. So what's next?
All right. So and then the one other thing I wanted to touch on real quick before we go on to the next thing was with the password safes, at least with 1Password, is you can also natively within that application store your two-factor authentication in there. So it's just a convenient way to, you know, you have your username and password and your token all in one spot. Mm-hmm. And I'm not paid by 1Password to say that. They just make a really good application.
Okay.
So the next thing that I really suggest people to do is to download and install a paid VPN. One of the things that I really stress is and as we said earlier in the show, you know, you don't want to always, you know, go for the free. Just to backtrack just a little bit, as far as if you don't want to spend the money for a password safe, if you do have an iOS device, Apple natively has a password safe called Keychain that you can use on your iOS device, which is free. It's not quite as user friendly as some of the others that are out there, but it is a step in the right direction. But for VPNs, again, I would suggest to get a paid VPN. And the reason I say that is because you don't want to. And there's a couple different reasons why, but really, most of the paid VPNs, their data or the data that they're logging against you, most of the time, they're in other countries, right? And the reason for that is so that your data is protected. And for those of you that don't know what a VPN is or what it stands for a virtual private network. And essentially what that does is it encrypts your data transaction between your device and the VPN service, right? And to whatever, you know, service that you're using, right? You're trying to log into. So a lot of times if you're, you know, like we are sitting here in the Cigar Lounge, you know, we're on their Wi-Fi, which is a public Wi-Fi. And if I didn't have my VPN running, there's the potential that the other folks that are sitting next to us would be able to read my data or collect my data that's not encrypted on the network, right? So that this adds a layer of protection, right, against your data that's in transit to wherever its, you know, destination is. And again, this is not something that's, you know, an extremely hard uplift. It's most of the time these VPN providers, and, you know, I suggest that you do a little research on it, you know, do a quick search and see which ones are out there, which ones are rated the best. I don't know which one. I think you said that you use...
I use Norton 360. I think that's what it is, 360.
Okay, and I use Viper VPN, so, and which are some of the top VPN providers out there. But just do a little bit of research into them, see, make sure that they're not storing their logs, you know, in the United States, and they're not storing their logs for long periods of time. You know, a lot of the VPN providers, they, you know, the whole premise of it is that you don't want them logging your data.
Right.
Because there's a potential that if they're storing that data, then an attacker might be able to get that data.
Right. So is it wise to keep your VPN located in the United States, or should it be in a foreign country? And if it's in a foreign country, what country would be the best?
So it's going to depend, right? It depends on what type of application you're trying to access, right? So if it's a banking application, a lot of banks already have some IP blocking in place. So if it appears that you're coming from Guatemala or something, it may stop you from being able to log into to that service. So it depends on what kind of service you're trying to log into. So if you're trying to log into your financials, it's probably advised that you go from a either a U.S. based IP or and you can log in from other countries, but some non-restricted countries, like don't try to log in from China or something.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. But I was thinking maybe Canada or European country, something like that.
Yep. And that's perfectly fine.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Because there's some places that you will go, like certain crypto exchanges, they don't want to do business with people with a US IP. So if you set your IP for someplace other than the US, like Canada, then you can have access in there, and you're not going to have any problem.
Yep, exactly. And that's and it's a funny little sidebar is that there's a lot of people that they use VPNs to get early access to like Netflix content, for example, because they want to see a show before it comes out in the U.S. But
yeah, that's taking it really far. But okay, we got time for one more.
Okay, so. The last thing that I would suggest to people is I highly advise that you go through your privacy settings. And this is something that is pretty easy. You know, sit down at night one night, you know, crack a cold beer or something if that's what you're into, and take a peruse through your privacy settings in your, you know, both on your computer and on your phone. A lot of times, and Apple, you know, and iOS devices have been getting better at this, but it's really it's your job and it's your responsibility to approve or disapprove access to different items in your phone. So, for example, let's say I have my banking app, right? And I have that downloaded and installed on my phone, and it has access to my camera and my microphone and maybe my photos or something, right? And you can specifically choose, right, what you want it to have access to. So does my banking app really need access to my microphone? Am I ever going to?
No.
Right? I would say probably not.
Yeah.
But does it need access to my camera? Probably yes, because you might need to, you know, take pictures of your checks for depositing,
yeah.
Right? So a simple thing would be to go through your privacy settings and say, hey, does this application really need access to my microphone? Does it really need access? Does it need my location? Right?
Right.
It's another big
right.
one, right? Maybe it does, if you're using, Google navigation or Waze or something, right, to get somewhere, it may need access to your location, but, you know, does your social media need access to your location all the time? Does
no.
your, you know, banking app need access to your location all the time?
No.
So these are things, you know, that limit the data sharing, right, is really the message I'm trying to get across. I think the message is that we've seen such an increase and a rise in these attacks and such a dramatic increase of data breaches that if this is happening all the time, maybe we should really take a step back and try to limit that data that these companies have to limit your exposure.
Yeah, that's important because it's all about privacy. You know, you wouldn't want your neighbor peering over your fence to see what you're doing, you know, even if you're just barbecuing outside. You don't want them picking over the fence and, you know, Googling at you and the family. So it's the same thing.
Right, right.
You know,
And the same thing like a username and passwords, right? You wouldn't leave your front door locked or your garage open when you leave, right? You
right.
would want to make sure that you lock the door, and that's why we want to use a strong password and try
yeah.
to, you know, secure our belongings, and
yeah.
our data is our belonging.
Well, what's good about these password wallets, they create a fresh password that is multi-dimensional that helps secure your entry into those various applications that you need it for. Just real quick, can you give us what is a strong password and what does it require?
So passwords are obviously the length of the password, right, is very important because that determines how long or how hard it is for somebody to crack that password or a threat actor to crack that password.
Right.
So if you have, you know, a three-letter password, it's going to be very easy for a computer to crack.
Yeah.
But if you have, you know, a 20-character password, it's going to take a lot longer, and it's not, you know, it's not fruitful for somebody to spend the time trying to
right.
crack that password.
Right.
So I would suggest that you try to, at a bare minimum, somewhere between 12 and 18 characters.
Okay.
Right? And that should be supported on most platforms. The other thing is that, you know, depending upon the service that you're logging into,
mm-hmm.
you know, they support different amount of characters that
right.
you could use as a password. So something to keep in mind. But, and then the other thing to do is, you know, lowercase, uppercase, numbers, symbols, right?
Right.
These are things that make the password more complex and harder to, for a threat actor to crack. So on the high end of the spectrum, you'd want, you know, all of those things, you know, uppercase, lowercase, numbers and symbols, you know, at an 18 character password would be the strongest password. And the benefit of having that password safe or that password wallet is that you can do that and not have to memorize that password, right? All you're doing is copy and pasting that password by using the app, and it's not something that you have to remember. It's not humanly readable.
That's good. That's good. It's simple for us old guys. All right. Well, Kevin, it was great having this information so that we could help our friends out there that are listening. So civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, Telegram at Civil Defense Radio Channel, MeWe at Civil Defense Radio, and on YouTube at Civil Defense Radio Channel. I have deleted Twitter, but most of the items that we post are important information about the many threats we see to our safety and security as a nation. However, when I find something funny, I will post that too. Please consider this information and use it wisely. I wish to thank Kevin for being with us again, and I wish to thank you and our friends out there who are listening to us on a regular basis. Our international friends want to give you a shout out too. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.